Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. You don't need to know a lot about saving endangered species to realize that habitat destruction is one of the biggest causes. However, there are different ways to handle habitat destruction. The most common way is to remove the human presence from the endangered animal's habitat. Those people who are expelled or who live in the area are expected to like it or lump it. If they persist, they might be punished, legally or otherwise. However, a rather serendipitous event occurred when zoologist Pan Wen-Shi decided to change his focus from pandas and to explore the evolution of animal society to human-animal society instead. The subject of his research was the highly endangered white-headed langur, whose native habitat is China. Pan and his team went to the mountains of Changzhou, where both humans and the white-headed langurs shared the same environment. Sounds like a match in heaven, doesn't it? On the one hand, you have a highly endangered animal losing its habitat, and on the other, you have the villagers who live in and around the mountains who are the source of this habitat destruction. Then an event occurred that changed everything. Pan had hired a local farmer to be his assistant. He gave the farmer some dessert to take home to his children. This is the kind of thing that most of us would do. But when Pan asked the farmer the next day whether his children had enjoyed the dessert, the farmer confessed that he had been so hungry he ate it all on his way home. This made Pan realize that in order to save the langurs, he had to save the people first. Pan makes the rather shocking statement, "We could delay our research into langurs for 100 or 200 years, but if we don't save the villagers first, the monkeys' habitat would be destroyed." Think about that. If the habitat is destroyed, there will still be langur evidence that can be studied. It might be in the form of preserved tissues, skeletons, videos, all kinds of data, plus perhaps a population in multiple zoos. There will always be a way to study the endangered or even extinct white-headed langurs, one way or another. But if the habitat is destroyed, there will be no way to study the white-headed langurs in their natural environment. This awareness shifted the focus of Pan's activities. He donated a financial environmental reward he had received to build 3 biogas tanks in nearby villages. He solicited funds from the government and more donors to meet the needs of the 1,800 families in the 14 villages that surround the mountain. He also persuaded the local government to shift the area's agricultural emphasis from rice to the more economically feasible sugarcane and teach them farming methods to reduce the need for pesticides to further improve the environment. Over the 20 years that he worked on this project, he also solicited funds from friends far and near, private companies, and also the government. And with these, primary school, 2 clinics, 3 drinking water projects, and a 2-kilometer, little over mile-long road were built for the villagers. But he was a shrewd businessman and educator, too. The funds also built a biological museum, an educational center, and an ecological park that featured the Langers. But what about the Langers? What happened to them in those 20 years? Did they die out? Anything but. During the 20 years when he was helping to improve the lives of the villagers around the habitat, the population increased from the 96 when he arrived to 800 animals. When asked the secret of his program's success, Pan Wen-chi attributed it to his love of people as well as his love of animals.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.